The court is now ready to hear argument in 080836 in Re Weekly Homes.
May it please the court, Mr. Enoch will present argument for the relator. The relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. I'm Craig Enoch. My co-counsel at table is Joel Reese, one of my partners. It's our honor to be here to represent David Weekly Homes. When this court promulgated its new discovery rules in 1998 and 1999, it added this comment, comment number one. While the scope of discovery is quite broad, it is nevertheless confined by the subject matter of the case and reasonable expectations of obtaining information that will aid resolution of the dispute. The rule must be read and applied in that context. In Rule of Procedure 192, this court instructs what the permissible process of discovery is. The court also instructs in Rule 92 what the permissible scope of discovery is. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Mr. Enoch, can you envision when any type of case where an entire hard drive would be required to be produced?
Your Honor, as a matter of fact, not. Even Rule 196.4 takes the position that even if you get to mirror the hard drive remains in the possession of the responding party. The only question is, if it's going to be very expensive to reproduce it, then the court has to address the cost of doing so. But even in the rule that permits a hard drive to be mirrored, if that's the case, it doesn't allow for the hard drive to be physically removed from the owner's possession and given to the requesting party's agents to look at the document.
Well, if the owner doesn't know how to look for something in there, how is the court going to make sure that it's properly examined to see if there's something in there that should have been produced?
Your Honor, there are forensic analysts who can look at hard drives and can do that. The question is, who is supervising when that happens? And it's got to be the responder.
Did your client offer to do that on its own, that we'll use our own people to do that?
Your Honor, we're not even there yet, because there is not any basis for the court to order any of these hard drives to be mirror imaged at all, because under 196.4, the question is it electronic information that needs to be found? That's metadata. That's what the court has asked for. It says if you're looking for the electronic signatures of the pages, if you're looking for electronic information that does not appear on the document that gets printed from that electronic information, here's the process that you go look for that metadata. In this case, envision, if you will, a warehouse of filing cabinets filled with files, filled with documents. The only distinction between that case and this one is that that warehouse of files can be accumulated on a disk this big. But in terms of the concepts that the court has imposed, has understood under Rule 192, the concepts are identical. We don't allow a requester to go into our warehouse and start leafing through files to determine what they want. So we make them identify what they're looking for.
So you're saying the only thing being requested is documents, copies of emails, not metadata or electronic information that may be in a computer or on a hard drive, but the only thing that's being requested is documents that can be printed out and produced if they exist.
The record in this case is we just don't believe those are all the documents. Let us go mirror image the hard drives.
Now, you would agree, wouldn't you, counsel, that if there's a reason for a judge to order as a sanction or to order because a party has been obstreperous and just is stonewalling and won't produce relevant discovery, then the judge has the authority to order mirroring hard drive under appropriate protections in order to get even production of documents. At some point, a trial judge can have that discretion and authority. Wouldn't you agree?
Your Honor, I think there are cases in other jurisdictions that look at the conduct of the responding party and evaluate that conduct to determine how severe the court's intervention into this process must be on the production. I'm not sure that the physical removal of the hard drives to an off-site deal in the absence of evidence of spoliation, the absence of destroying documents on the hard drive, in the absence of active, intentional conduct on part of a defendant to eliminate information that might otherwise be available, I'm not sure that it would justify any lesser conduct would justify the actual removal, but simply as Rule 196.4 says, that within the business domain of the responder, the court can place a forensic specialist to do the imaging of the hard drive.
So you do agree that the trial judge does have authority to do this in certain circumstances, but you don't think those circumstances are present in this case?
Certainly not in this case.
Now, who is paying the forensic experts, the PricewaterhouseCoopers people, and who are they going to call and ask if there are questions as they were doing the mirror image and those things?
Well, Your Honor, that's answered by the court's order in this case. It is their forensics expert who will be doing the mirroring image at their forensic expert's lab, not in our facilities, with their lawyers present.
Now, there's also been an assertion in the briefs that the experts are not going to read any of the information. They're going to look for these 21 search firms through a computer program, and they wouldn't be reading the information. They'd just be accumulating it and then passing it on. Actually, you, representatives of Weekly, who would then have the ability to object and produce a privilege log.
Well,
what about the assertion that the experts weren't going to read it? I thought that was curious.
Well, it's curious to me because we have no evidence from the experts what they're going to do. There is no evidence in this record from the experts about just exactly what it is that they do. So I don't know.
Let me ask you, here's what bothers me about this case. As I read the briefing, all I see is you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this. But there's no effort to say, let us fashion a way to get this information. Now let me go to, let's treat this like a regular paper document request. It strikes me that deleted emails that can be retrieved are like off-site storage. Would you agree with me on that analogy? They're not readily accessible. Let's just say they're off-site.
I agree. It's like the warehouse. It's got filing cabinets, and you've got all the documents.
That way. In that instance, it would be your responsibility, Weekly's responsibility, to go in and produce those documents in the first instance.
That's correct.
And they were not produced in the first instance.
One caveat. Our obligation is only to produce documents that are relevant to the question asked.
Of course. But, again, the documents requested, relevant, not privileged.
Correct.
But they're in off-site storage. It's your client's duty to produce those documents in the first instance.
That's correct.
And there's been no offer to produce them. A motion to compel was filed. And let's just, again, analogize it to off-site storage. It strikes me that it would be your client's burden then to either go off-site and retrieve the data yourself, which doesn't appear to me to have been offered, or if that can't be done, to offer some ways to get it done or prove that it's unduly burdensome and cost an expense, just as you would with voluminous off-site storage.
Your Honor, there was a motion to compel. The motion to compel was litigated in the trial court. The trial court heard all the evidence on the motion to compel and said that our response was in good faith on the motion to compel.
I'm not saying bad faith, but I is what you want here to be able to go through and take these data points and process them yourself and retrieve from the hard drives? I haven't seen that offer.
Your Honor, the posture of the case may be a little bit different. And perhaps I should explain the posture of the case.
Let me rephrase my question.
Okay.
I keep reading why what the trial court did was improper.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you think it would be proper?
I don't think it would be proper under these circumstances at all.
How would a plaintiff get this information properly?
First of all, Your Honor, they only get the information off of our hard drives if under Rule 196.4 they say they want metadata. If you look at the cases, the only thing unique about this,
okay,
about so electronic, is metadata.
If they had said, we want metadata.
That's correct. Then they have to come to the court under Rule 196.4 and assert that there's a reason for metadata. It has to be relevant. The request has to be, in the first instance, be relevant. Metadata, the cases that they cite about metadata is because there's something about the document itself that indicates that there's something behind the document that metadata might be relevant to. As an example.
Wait. We're talking about deleted emails. Those are documents.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Why aren't they entitled to documents?
Your Honor, they would be if there was any evidence that there were any documents relevant to this case that were deleted. There is no evidence. There is no evidence in this case that any documents that existed relevant to this were deleted.
Ever prove that? I mean, if this is like off-site storage, it's your burden to produce those in the first instance. They don't have to prove anything. And what I'm hearing from your side is we're not willing to search for deleted items. We're not going to do that.
Your Honor, okay. The record in this case says we have produced all the documents we have. We have produced all the documents we have.
But you haven't produced off-site documents.
No, we've produced all the documents we have. Off-site, on-site, computers. We have produced the only evidence in this field.
Have you produced all the documents you can have?
Yes, we've produced them all.
How do you produce the documents that have been deleted?
Your Honor, there's no evidence that we've deleted anything.
There is. Someone said our employees delete these documents regularly, so we don't know what might be out there. It's just been deleted, and we don't know if we can retrieve it or not.
Your Honor, the testimony is, how do you maintain your documents? And the testimony is, periodically, we have a narrow space on the computer, and therefore, some documents get deleted because in order to have the capacity to hold more documents, we need that capacity to delete. That's an overwrite. We have no testimony that can retrieve any deleted
documents.
But
we don't have any testimony that you can't. And so, again, off-site storage analogy. Okay, at the end of every day, we send every document we have to off-site storage. It strikes me as the same thing. That doesn't mean you don't have a duty to look through the off-site storage to determine if there's anything responsive.
It seems to me on that particular answer, you would still have a Rule 196.4 that you'd come forward saying that there is a need to go double-check their computers. And the rule says that the defendant maintains control of their computers. If the cost is prohibitive, then the plaintiff has to share the cost or the court assess costs for producing the equipment. But even on that circumstance, there is a rule specifically in place that governs how that will be handled and managed by the court.
Separately from this case, just in cases in general, you can ask the other side for emails relating to our contract.
Yes, sir.
And could you ask the other side for deleted emails, emails that have been deleted in the ordinary course of business relating to our contract?
If we can retrieve them, yes.
If it's expensive, you can ask them to pay for it. So they could ask for any of these deleted emails.
That's correct.
Have they in this case?
Your Honor, they have not asked for the deleted emails. They have not produced, and I think the key to this, they have not set it up in such a way as either to show that we've not produced everything we have or that there were relevant inquiries that we had at one time and deleted. And I think that's the threshold here. They have no evidence, they've not offered any evidence, that we have anything that was relevant to this case that was deleted. Now, the argument that I understand is being made is that because we have a witness who says we can't carry all those emails that we have on our machines and therefore there's a deletion that occurs, it's not the same thing as said we have relevant information that we have deleted and therefore go get it. And all of the rules of discovery require in the first instance that there has to be a request for relevant information. This court's order gives our computers to their experts. Their experts will say, look for any document that says fence. Look for any document that says landscape.
Again, let me get back to how would you, let's go back to the trial court.
Yes.
How would you propose these documents? Tell me the procedure you think is proper.
If there was any evidence of bad faith.
Wait. I'm the plaintiff, and I want all documents relating to the stability study. What was that called?
Slope stability.
Slope stability study. I want all documents relating to that, all communications of any kind, way, shape, or form. You would say that the deleted items, the off-site storage, they would have to prove that in that off-site storage there are documents that may be relevant.
They would have to
their
prove,
burden in the first instance.
That's correct. They would have to have, through their experts, some indication that those documents exist off-site.
Tell me how they would do that.
Because a backup tape. That my only familiarity is if I have a system that has a backup for this, then it's possible. If I know I've got a backup system, then it's possible to say, well, that deleted item might still be out there because it was on the backup. But if I don't maintain a backup system, if all I do is have a system that overwrites whatever it is I deleted, then it's not at all sure that there's an offsite for this kind of information.
Well, but if there's not, then nothing's going to happen. The Pricewaterhouse is going to go in there. There won't be anything.
Pricewaterhouse, there's been no evidence whatsoever about anything about the system, about where it can be. So,
again, I'm trying to get at what you think their burden should be. We want all documents related to the stability study. Now I've got to prove how you maintain your documents. And I've got to prove that they're retrievable and relevant information may be in there. That's my burden in the first instance?
Your Honor, I believe that would be your burden in the first instance. And let me try and explain how I see this. I have to give you a request for a document that meets this category. You say, you've got them all. I've given them all to you. Then what happens? The other side comes up and says, you haven't responded. I know you say you have, but you have not responded. Therefore, I'm going to bring a motion to compel you to respond.
I have discovered that you maintain documents in off-site storage, and I want those off-site storage documents. And you say, but they're in South America. I can't get them. And so it strikes me that they can say, well, either you get them or we're going to send somebody down there to look for specific boxes.
Your Honor, and the court would say, what is your indication that they have these documents off-site?
But what if you respond, we don't know because we haven't looked. We haven't sent anybody to the warehouse because we don't have anyone to send. Does a trial court have to say, okay, that's it? Or can the trial court say, well, if you don't send someone, we're going to. I'm going to.
Your Honor, I think our answer was we looked and we've given you everything we found.
Okay.
But you didn't look in off-site storage. You didn't look in deleted emails.
We didn't look in – I guess that we did not say we did not look at deleted emails.
I thought there was testimony to that effect.
In a different hearing, different subject, different question – our general counsel made a general comment about how the documents are managed, but nothing about these emails. It was no question about this subject matter or these emails, but a general understanding from the general counsel of how some items, communications among the various employees work, and you ended up with a general comment about after 30 days they get deleted because they have capacity issues in those computers. But not in reference to any of the documents that are the subject of this. Was that coming?
Further question.
One finite question. Request for production number 18 regarding Russell Rice, one of the persons identified in the trial court's order. Please produce any documents in your possession, custody, and control relating to any communications, including but not limited to emails between Russell Rice of Weekly and White. Does that request for production in Weekly's view include deleted emails?
In my view, it included everything we could locate.
In your client's view, as they approached it at the trial court?
That's right. In the client's view, they produced everything they thought they could retrieve.
Does that include deleted emails?
It would be my understanding, anything that could be retrieved, and they would assume, if they did not know any deleted emails were available to them to be retrieved, I guess there would be some not delivered. The specific question on that delivery, the trial court found good faith in responding to that particular request.
I'm not sure I've got an answer.
Yes, sir.
Did they produce deleted emails? So I'll change my question a little bit. Did Weekly at the trial court produce any emails that had been deleted?
That I do not know.
Further questions?
Thank you, counsel. The court is now ready to hear arguments from the real party in interest.
May it please the court, Mr. Rensel will present argument for the real party in interest.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, this is a case involving allegations of fraud and fraudulent concealment, and as this court said in 1995 in the Bianchi case, it is oftentimes impossible to have direct evidence of what has been withheld, and it can only be proved by circumstantial evidence.
Before you get into the details, can I just ask you something about the case? As I understand it, your client bought from the developer. Your client bought the leftover lots from the developer, and Weekly had promised to buy all of the lots eventually.
Yes.
Why would they have any motivation or incentive to defraud you?
At the time that our client, which was a lot warehouser, came on the scene, Weekly had a letter of credit of $900,000 up with the bank. The underlying developer was then in default, and that letter of credit could have been imminently drawn, and Weekly would have been out $900,000. By virtue of this transaction, where HFG came on the scene and basically stood in the shoes of the developer, that earnest money exposure went down to $148,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Justice O'Neill, I think it might be helpful if I addressed two or three of the questions that you raised, starting with the first one. Was there ever an offer on the part of David Weekly Homes to go into their system and produce deleted emails? And the answer to that is no.
I'm not clear why they should offer that. Is that how discovery?
No, actually,
respond by saying, well, how about this?
You get into the areas here right at this point that's been addressed and surfaced in the Zubilek opinion and the Sedona conference and a lot of different articles as to who has that responsibility.
Yeah, but in Zubilek, they knew there was likely to be some material in the backup tapes they were going to go search, and
right.
It turned out there was. And they knew that from talking to the people involved in the case. Has any effort been made to ask these fellows, Rice, Bailey, Vestano, and Thompson, if there were such emails or reports or anything?
I took the deposition, and this was in much of this was in the record of the previous motion to compel, which had three different hearings. And 5 days after the order on the motion to compel was signed, we filed this motion for limited access. So they almost blended together.
You said limited access?
Limited access to computers. That was actually the technical name of the motion.
Well, then it seems maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, but if the judge signed this type of order, that seems to be overbroad if he's ordered the production of the entire hard drive systems.
The title of the motion was a motion for limited access to computers. I believe I'm remembering that correctly. But it specified specific computers.
So what did you find out in the deposition?
What we found at the deposition, we found out one thing in Mr. Rice's deposition was that, yes, he did communicate by emails, that they would be deleted. He would have what was still in his system and what he had archived. And, in fact, Mr. Rice produced 30 emails over the course of the discovery. At the motion to compel hearing, Mr. Birchfield, the general counsel for David Weekly Homes, and this was read into the record at the hearing that's involving access to the hard drives, he testified, as is in the record here, that there was periodic deletion, oftentimes less than 30 days, of all emails for people within the company. And given the fact that three critical employees, the project manager, the area president, the area vice president, produced one email between them over what was a very troubled development over the course of a multi-year period, we saw that there was an unexplained gap or discrepancy in their production.
Did you ask them, what about this gap?
Yes.
And what did they say?
Yeah, well, that was a subject of the motion to compel.
No, I mean, there was no evidence taken on the motion except Mr. Birchfield's testimony at some point, right?
And Mr. I did ask Mr. Rice at his deposition, and his testimony was, all I have is what I archived and saved, and I gave that to my lawyers. That was what his testimony was.
So then what basis is there to look for anything else?
The discrepancies and inconsistencies in their production. You've got the critical people involved in this particular development who produced a grand total of one email throughout the course of this entire time frame, notwithstanding the fact that they had repeated problems with the developer, and then notwithstanding the fact that they had slope stability problems, which resulted in a finding by a geotechnical consulting company.
Well, if you think there are deleted emails, then why ask for all the documents on four hard drives that have 21 terms in them?
That's the procedure that the forensic experts utilize. What they do.
Well, won't it get off?
People that are going to get paid for doing all this, right?
They are, in fact, would be paid by my client to answer an earlier question. Yes, they'd be paid by that. And this procedure is the same procedure that has been described in the case law back since 99.
Judge Hicks' question is, why don't you ask them for the emails about this project that you deleted?
But the way they operate is that they have to mirror image the entire hard drive. And then they apply the search terms and draw out the documents, the hits.
Do you
that
know
is the only way they can do it. When they mirror image the hard drive, it is some kind of a mechanical process.
Is that in the record?
The details of that are not in the record. The details of that, frankly, are discussed in virtually every case, starting with the Playboy Enterprises case through Zubelake. It's a fairly common procedure.
Counsel, did you ask Weekly if Weekly could go back and produce the deleted emails?
More than that, and this is what I was going to say to Justice O'Neill, in our motion to compel that we filed, and this is in the record, this is appendix page 0313, we asked that the court order them to produce the various emails, deleted emails, and we specifically asked, however, HFG requests that the court require Weekly to search for any emails stored on servers or backup tapes or other media in email folders and email accounts of the individuals listed. What we tried to do at the motion to compel stage was have David Weekly Homes go into their own system and pull off deleted emails. They absolutely opposed every aspect of this, and the court denied the motion.
Did the trial judge at any point order the defendant to go get their deleted emails over their objection?
No, she denied her motion.
And you can see the problem we're wrestling with here is taking someone's property away from them, give it to someone else to search through in discovery in a lawsuit without a whole lot of targeting as to what's relevant. Maybe the 21 search terms helped there, but only a few of those terms were identified in the briefs. Maybe that's because of trade secret or confidentiality concerns. But before, generally, with paper discovery, I think it's pretty clear that before you let anybody or order anybody to rumble through the opposing party's files, you've got to order them to do that first. The trial judge has never ordered the defendant to rumble through their electronic file cabinet for deleted emails first?
She did not.
Before giving it to the other side?
She did not order them to do so. She denied this request.
Don't you think if it were your client, wouldn't you want your client to have the opportunity to go and look for deleted emails before someone orders your hard drive sent to the other side first?
Well, here's the problem. If back in the first Zubilek case, where there was a breakout of five different categories of just how accessible is various data, the data left on the hard drive that might be fragmented might be partially overwritten. You don't know till you get there. You know, that's deemed to be inaccessible. And at least under the federal guidelines and the federal rules, the producing party doesn't have to go in there at their own expense. That's just a whole different procedure. And I think that's why this procedure has been adopted. I mean, really what this is, in all the cases that we're talking about and that have been briefed, and they're all, frankly, reconcilable, they largely deal with the shifting of the burden of the costs from the producing party to the requesting party.
And I understand that, but there's also a matter of propriety of your own property. Before you lose control over your own property, don't you think there needs to be some evidence that there's things out there that, notwithstanding an order to produce, you still aren't producing before you say, your file cabinet, electronic file cabinet, goes to them to look through, to the other side to look through?
Well, and it doesn't go to us.
You're paying
Justice Wainwright. It does go to PricewaterhouseCoopers.
You're paying the experts.
That is correct.
And if there's a question in the process, as I understand it, of making this mirror image, they call you, not the defendants, right?
I don't believe that particular point is addressed in the protective order. Well, I mean, my understanding is they are experts. Their CVs are
submitted
to the court.
They're not going
to
have any questions?
And they're either going to be able to turn it up or not turn it up. They've got various software packages that they would utilize. We would not be in the process. And to address something that was said earlier by opposing counsel, on three different occasions at the argument in the record, in this particular motion for limited access to the hard drives, itself had two hearings totaling 62 pages of transcripts. And at that hearing, on three different spots, we made clear that our client and myself and my associate, nobody from our side would be there while PricewaterhouseCoopers was making the mirror imaging and going
Let me ask you this, Mr. Rentschel.
Yes.
Mr. Enix said that the only way to get into this request that you have is through metadata. And it has to be relevant. What's your response to this?
I think that is completely wrong.
Okay, why
so? From the very beginning of this case, we have said that we are proceeding under the normal discovery rules of paper discovery. And this is a question that Justice O'Neill raised. Obviously, and this is in our motion, we followed the Hanza case as closely as we could. I mean, we painted between the numbers of that case. It was the only one on the books in Texas. The Hanza case itself cites a lot of prior precedent from the federal system and the state court system. It cited to the Playboy Enterprises versus Wells case on eight different occasions, a Southern District of California federal case. You know, that case said multiple things, but not the least of which was the fact that when you're requesting a document, you're also requesting the document in deleted form.
Let me ask if I can put a finer point on Justice Medina's question. Is there anything that you're seeking other than a hard copy of the deleted emails?
No.
So there's no metadata per se?
We're not seeking metadata. We are seeking what we would had they printed off all their emails and handed them to us. That's really all we're trying to get to right now. Not seeking metadata.
Let me make sure I understand then. If you're not seeking anything but paper, so if they say, okay, you've asked for an email, we'll look in our email accounts. If they're like everybody else's, I guess. You've got your email account, and it's deleted. It goes to the deleted items folder. You delete from there, it goes to some archive thing or some backup and so forth. And if you can identify those, then you can print out a copy and produce them. But if they've been shredded, if you go back to the paper, you take a document, here's a document, runs it through the shredder, it no longer exists unless you send somebody over to try to piece those pages back together. Now, is that what you're looking for in these electronic records, the documents that have been overwritten partially and so forth, you're trying to piece them back together? Or are you trying to find the record that's somewhere in there that if you look at it, oh, there's an email that's identifiable and can be printed out by pressing the print button?
Well, to answer your question, first of all, you cannot, the only hard copies of documents have been shredded, then that's just going to be unavailable information.
So
here,
so then,
the forensic experts would be able to retrieve perhaps all of the emails or a lot of them, but they do not have to piece them together line by line.
So they would be it would be an electronic file that you could look at on the computer monitor. It says, you know, whatever the file name is, and you could print that. Backup tapes or on their email system, on their computers, you can see numbers. So now, from what I understand, the council said is that they've gone through and looked for all that. And I guess what you're saying, you just don't believe them.
No. I'm not saying that at all. Here's what the testimony was before the court and right into the court.
Summarize it first, what your opinion is, then tell us what the testimony was.
Okay.
Bottom line, what's your summary?
The bottom line is, within 30 days, all of their emails in their system are deleted unless they're archived. They say they produced their archived information. They say they've not produced their deleted information because it's gone. It's been deleted.
Shredded.
Well, but it's someplace. Being deleted, and this is in Zuba Lake in the Sedona Conference, doesn't mean it's gone. It just means it's lost its address in the directory. But it's likely still on the hard drive. Now, it actually, this deleted information went to the server, the backup tapes, initially. But their backup tapes only have a life expectancy of 30 days themselves. So once you go 30 and 30 days, it is gone except on the hard drive. And they did not go back to the hard drive and do what we say we would pay to have done.
Mr. Renshaw, let me ask you this. Is this an all-or-nothing case? I loved being a trial judge. It was a lot of fun until you got to issues like this on discovery. And so if you're trying to fashion a remedy, do you either get all of it or none of it, or is there something, there's some method to get what you actually need and proceed on with the course of the trial?
I honestly do not see how you could split this baby. I mean, there's going to be – what we tried to do was be as narrow as we possibly could by pinning this down to a one-year time frame, 21 search terms, 4 computers. And then, you know, what that turns up is what it is.
Don't you think this is likely to produce hundreds, if not thousands, of documents that have nothing whatever to do with this case?
That would be no different than the warehouse.
Right.
With hard copies. I mean, that's just part of the production.
I understand that, but when you say, I've been to the warehouse, I looked there aren't any documents, you don't appoint a special master to go in there and go through them himself one by one and say, well, this might be, because it has the word defective in it.
Well, what happens is, after the mirror,
you couldn't afford it, for one thing.
After the mirror imaging and then the application of the 21 search terms, the number of documents that are triggered by that, the hits, are then sent to opposing counsel for the relator, to review for relevance and privilege.
Don't you anticipate there'll be a lot of them?
I have no idea. I mean, there's just no way of knowing.
I just don't think on an operation like Weekly Homes, defective or letter of credit or entry or earnest money or mowing is going to show up very often.
But it's 4 people. It's 4 people's personal hard drives for a one-year period. Right. And I honestly don't. I mean, we tried to keep that as narrow as we could.
Did they only work on Enclave?
No, but they worked in the Dallas area.
I thought I heard Mr. Enoch tell Justice Owen that the plaintiff here could have asked for deleted emails but never did. But I thought I heard you say earlier that just simply is not the case.
As I reference back to the Playboy Enterprises case, our position has always been that we were proceeding under 192.3b. a request for documents. Initially, that's where we were. We never did get into the terrain of 196.4. We have not been asking for Excel spreadsheets, databases, tables, or anything of that nature. That's the computer data that Mr. Enoch is referring to. We've not gone that route. We've requested documents. Had they not deleted them, they would have given them to us. They have deleted them. And under the Playboy Enterprises case, the law is, and other cases following it, and it is very often cited, is that when you request a document, you are, by doing so, requesting the deleted version of it.
Okay, let me ask you a question. If you had proceeded under 196.4, let me make sure I understand the procedure correctly.
Okay.
Then it would be your burden to say, we want emails, including deleted emails, and here's how we want it produced in paper form, let's say. I mean, that seems to be what the rule says. It says the responding party must produce it if it's responsive and reasonably available. So in that instance, Weekly would say it's not reasonably available because it requires searching our hard drives, and that's not reasonably available,
right.
I presume they would say. And they would have to show that they could not, through reasonable efforts, retrieve the data or information requested. So then if the court orders the respondent to comply with the request, it can order the requesting party to pay the expenses. So it seems that under 196.4, it contemplates that the responding party itself goes through the data with the plaintiff, in this instance, paying that cost.
It would contemplate that, but again, from the very outset, we never believed that was the controlling rule. We've always believed we're not going after electronic data, we're going after the documents. Again, going back to the Playboy Enterprises case.
But counsel, when you're going after documents, you always give the party that owns them, that possesses them, the first opportunity to produce before you give the file to the other side to go through.
And we have had the requests, a motion to compel, and then within a week of the denial, the written denial of the motion to compel, we then filed this motion.
Right, and as you said, the trial judge never ordered the defendant to go do what now it's ordered to happen through some third party that your client's paying.
The judge did not order them to go retrieve this.
Do you think that would be an unreasonable thing for the judge to have ordered?
I think where the law is when it comes to documents that have been deleted and are only existing on the hard drive, I think the prevailing law today is that burden typically shifts to the requesting party to pay that cost.
So you think in the electronic age we're in, that burden in this particular type of circumstance has changed?
Yes.
Versus 10 years ago?
I definitely think
Are you saying the burden has changed or the burden of bearing the cost has changed?
I think that the risk, the cost have been shifted. And I also think that the standard has evolved over that 10-year period. And if I could close just with this, in the last 2 weeks, two courts have spoken to this issue, one being a district court in Kansas, and then ironically the Supreme Court of New Hampshire having this exact issue raised for the first time. And this is 13 days ago, and if I can just give the court these citations. The case in Kansas is Julie White, which references, it's 209 U.S. District Lexus 22068.
Counsel, can you submit that in a letter after argument?
Would be happy to.
I have just one quick question. Why is data on a hard drive not electronic data?
It is electronic. I don't think it's electronic data under 196.4 because we saw that as being data compilations, such as tables, spreadsheets, and databases, as opposed to documents under 192.3B.
Thank you, Chief. As to the burden, you're not just asking for shifting the burden in terms of paying the costs. What you, as I understand it, saying that the burden of doing the initial review of the hard drive is not on the party who's been requested to produce. And now that hard drive gets sent to a third party paid by the other side to review, versus having the party who owns the records do their initial compelled review. You're asking that that shift as well in an electronic case.
And they always had that opportunity to do this at any point prior to this juncture. They did not do it, and I think this is the point where we are. And the case law, going back to Playboy Enterprises, says that under the protective order and the court appointment of that third-party expert, that's no longer our agent. That's an officer of the court doing the investigation, notwithstanding the fact that it would be our client paying the fee. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Obviously, the court is really concerned about what, when the initial request for documents to be produced, the significance of that when everybody now uses computers and they save documents or they delete documents or whatever. I don't want to leave the court with any sort of impression that the key to this case is deletions of anything, because there is no, because the point will be that the evidence that's out there is that Weekly, in order to encourage their employees to save the important documents, they've got to be filed. They have to be moved to a file, otherwise they cannot receive any more emails. And then in a general comment, well, I guess you'd have to delete something in order to get your next email. But the process is to create a capacity on the individual's hard drives to force them to file the documents, to file the documents. The evidence in this case, extensive discovery in this case, is we've produced all we have.
I'm really having a hard time understanding where you are. I mean, I'm hearing you say we've produced everything. We don't have any duty to do anything else. But if there are documents on the hard drive, do you object to proceeding under the procedure put out in 196.4? It sounds like you're objecting to Weekly itself going in to retrieve this data.
Your Honor, and that's the other point I probably haven't been clear on. My point to this court will be there are rules of discovery that, if properly followed, give the court the authority to make certain steps. And I'm not here. The record I say here wouldn't justify using the rule, but I'm faced with an argument that we were never put in a posture to make in the trial court. There was never that argument made in the trial court.
That's what I'm asking you now. I understand they requested, they made a request to have you go through and look at these documents, look at these hard drives. And there was an objection to that.
Your Honor, there was a request to produce documents. There was a motion to compel. We had an argument about the production of documents. The trial court denied the motion to compel and found good faith. We have never had an argument about these hard drives. There has never been a request for a production of these hard drives.
I thought counsel just read it to us. I thought he just read from the motion to compel.
Not for the hard drives, Your Honor.
Information contained on the hard drive.
He requested emails pertaining to the subject matter of the litigation. We said we provided all the emails to the subject. The connection, if I were to say, okay, we should provide, if we can retrieve emails that ostensibly have been deleted, I guess we should. If the request was under 196 to produce that electronic data.
Presume it is under 196. You have no objection to Weekly hiring its own person to go in and retrieve data.
Your Honor, I think at that point, if we don't have an objection, we would not make an objection. If at that point we think that the request is not relevant, we think that's a threshold to any of the imposition discoveries.
Well, the trial court's clearly found that it's relevant. So, but I mean, today, as we stand here, is there an objection to Weekly itself going in with these data points and retrieving the requested information?
Your Honor, I would, for my client, yes. We would have an objection. I don't know what the client would say. I would not advise a client to go look in their hard drives for fence. I would not advise my client to go in their hard drives to look for Mo.
Then how can they get information if, in fact, it's shown that there is, and I understand you contest whether it's been properly shown, but presume it is shown that there are documents that are on a hard drive that are retrievable, how would you propose they get them? Because all I keep hearing is, no, no, no. How would you craft a response to this request? You don't like these terms. Do you agree that there could be terms searchable more narrowly that would get at what they're looking for?
I think, yes, certainly more narrowly, under the names of the particular development and a series of words that are attached so they show up in within a paragraph or within five digits of each other. I suppose it could be more narrowly. In fact, the cases that have gone to this extreme have all looked at how narrowly crafted the court's order is in producing.
You've proposed none.
Your Honor, when we came to the hearing, they had no words. And the judge said, well, give me some words, and they had the 25 words that they added.
And you proposed no additional and
searches. We didn't propose any additional answers, but one of our points about the court's order, it reversed the burden. If on Moe, as an example, Moe tings a document, the defendant has to log that document irrespective of relevance. So the point about 196.
Now you're on a different point. But
I wanted to explain that, because I'm still subject to this order, that the retrieval mechanism has a burden to us to log even the relevance.
Is there in the record a listing of all 21 search words? I saw five or six in the brief. Where's the list,
Your Honor,
of all 21?
Your Honor. On the court's order establishing a procedure, there's an Exhibit A that's attached that has about 25 search terms that are listed there.
Okay.
If you don't have it, I'll certainly get a copy to you.
The trial judge didn't send you back to the jury room with the bailiff to try to get things worked out.
I think the trial judge says this is new and innovative, and let's try this out. But I think the rules already provide a mechanism for doing that.
Well, the trial court may have just said, I'm not getting any help here, and I'm just going to do the best I can.
Possibly, Your Honor, but I don't know.
Are there any further questions? If not, thank you, counsel, for the argument that this cause is submitted. All the arguments are concluded for the day, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.